Riviera Radio. Business.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, you're not taking this very seriously, are you?
I'm taking it incredibly seriously.
No. I mean, you were out clubbing with Chris Grayling a couple of weeks ago, and then you're jetting off to Switzerland, you know, into your private little bolt hole. So, you know, you're not taking the whole coronavirus situation seriously at all, are you, really?
No, I am indeed taking it very seriously, and I continue to abide by all rules and regulations set out by various governments and jurisdictions in which I operate in. But it feels like the world is slowly but surely returning back to normal, but we can't, of course, take it for granted. You only have to look at the numbers out of the United States, out of Brazil, out of India. I think we saw record numbers in the past 24 hours or so of infection cases. So I think we still need to be cognizant about the potential risks of the virus and the impact it can have on individuals and, of course, the economy.
I just closed my email down because it was pinging, so...
Well, first time for everything, isn't it? I mean, you're rarely bombarded by emails, are you?
Mm. Somebody was wondering about that Netflix programme you were talking about last week. I can't remember what it was called. What was it?
Wiener? Yes.
Right, OK. So the gentleman...
Anthony Wiener.
Right.
Yes, it's called Wiener. It's a wonderful political documentary.
There you are. I can't remember who it was who asked about that, but Wiener is what you're looking for. Right, let's have a look at the markets. A pretty good week last week, but earnings season is upon us now, and pretty grim predictions about companies losing lots and lots of money.
Yeah, I think that's right. Listen, it was an unsettled week in global financial markets last week, although ultimately a positive one for equity markets. Investors digested a wide range of updates, including vaccine developments, key economic data releases, as well as the start of the second quarter earnings season. Against that backdrop, we have rising virus cases that threaten to suffocate reopening plans. In terms of equity market performance, European equities rose 1.6% last week, helped a little bit by expectations. European leaders will approve a recovery fund. S&P 500 rose for a third straight week. It was up 1.2%. That's its longest winning streak that we've seen since December. In terms of the earnings season, still very early stages. Focus, of course, last week was on the US bank, where record trading revenue helped to offset higher provisions for bad loans, as demonstrated by the likes of JP Morgan. I think given the broad range of uncertainties, it's no surprise that companies are still reticent to provide guidance for the rest of the year. If you look at analyst forecasts, this according to Bloomberg data, Stock 600 in Europe earnings are projected to contract by 32% during the course of this year, but then rebound by 36% as you look out to 2021. The S&P 500 earnings are forecast to drop 22% this year, with a 26% recovery as you look out to next year. In terms of the markets this morning, waiting for confirmation on that European summit, of course, but currently calling the FTSE up 5 points. DAX over in Frankfurt up 16 points. CAC 40 Paris up 1 point.
Not a very good advert for the European Union, is it? This haggling over the emergency coronavirus budget.
No, it's supposed to be an awful lot smoother than this. It's supposed to be done and dusted over the course of a couple of days. I think we're now moved into at least the fourth day of negotiations. It appears the Dutch have been pushing back amongst others. European leaders meeting in Brussels. Look like they are closing in, however, on a deal for this €750 billion stimulus package. The money apparently going to be spent on making the bloc carbon neutral by 2050, digitalizing the economy and investing in research and innovation, as well as, of course, providing support for economies. The new proposal is thought to keep the fund at the same size, but reduce the amount that's distributed as grants. The fund is seen as an important step for the future of the European bloc. Not only will it support battered economies, particularly the most vulnerable, the southern European economies, but it also shows a determination to move towards much greater levels of financial integration, embracing shared debt liability, for example. The Commission, to remind you, will borrow the money using government guarantees for the joint EU long-term budget as security. And it has been affecting markets already. The yield gap between German bonds and Italian debt has been narrowing. And of course, the euro has strengthened quite significantly. It's up around about 7% against the dollar compared to where we were back in the March lows.
So the Dutch holding things up really at this EU summit?
Yeah, it certainly appears so, particularly about the idea of grants and how much should be given away and how much should be structured in terms of loans. And that appears to be an important area that they've been focusing on. But the reality is, I think a deal will be done. It looks like, as I say, they're getting closer towards it. And it's certainly seen as positive for the European bloc.
Do you think the alarm bells are ringing at Facebook with droves of companies refusing to advertise? Disney, the latest one.
I think they'll be more concerned perhaps than when regulators were knocking on their doors. So I think advertisers likely to have probably greater sway in terms of changing policy. Disney, as you say, has become the latest company to slash its advertising on Facebook, adding to the list of companies that have reduced or pulled advertising spending from the social media giant over its handling of hate speech, controversial content, and misinformation. Other companies include the likes of Starbucks, Unilever, and Adidas. This is all part of the Stop Hate for Profit campaign. So we wait to see a formal, I think, acknowledgement from this from Facebook, but no doubt they are looking at their policies quite carefully.
This is your emails pinging now. You should turn it off, you know.
It is. I know you keep telling me. How do you turn
it? Well, just close it down. You just close the browser down. Click the X box and it will close it down and it won't ping.
I need to be in contact. Clients expect me to be available 24/7.
Well, you can't reply while you're talking to me, though, unless you're extremely multi-talented. So, I mean, they could give you 10 minutes, surely.
No problem there. No problem there at all.
Okay, I'd just like to go back to the markets a minute, Heng, because, you know, reports over the weekend saying that small-cap firms are expected to post declines of around 90%, mid-caps 67%, and large-caps 44%. So we're going to have a bumpy ride on the markets, aren't we, over the next few weeks?
Well, that's the second quarter numbers that they've been talking to. Markets, as we know, tend to look forward. So, and perhaps they're looking a little bit too far forward, and perhaps they're looking a little bit too optimistically in what we can expect for 2021. If you look at those figures that we were just talking about for expectations for next year, a strong rebound in profit is expected by analysts. But you have to question, is that realistic? We know, of course, that the COVID-19 is likely to still be around, the vaccine probably at the earliest, according to US officials, isn't going to be in place until the end of the first half of next year. Is it really realistic the companies will be able to maintain margins and to generate the same level of profitability with all the protocols, with all the disruption that's required, with all the problems around trade, with all the problems around supply lines coming through, as they did in 2019 for us? I think we still remain a little bit cautious about that prospect. So I think the markets have discounted a bad set of numbers for the second quarter. It'll be interesting to see whether we see changes towards the guidance as you look out to next year. And that's likely to determine where markets are going to go from here. But against, of course, the backdrop of overwhelming fiscal and monetary support, which is helping to boost confidence.
So did Chris Grayling buy you a drink then when you were out clubbing with him?
I wasn't clubbing him. I saw him down at the club, I have to say. I was nowhere near him. I'm sure
in the club.
More horrified to see me there than him being there.
It's probably just as well he didn't buy you a drink, because he probably would have just spilt it all over you anyway.
Listen, I prefer not to get into... You seem to want to drag me into the political arena each and every day.
It was
a mere mention that I saw him and he looked relatively cheerful despite his recent problem.
Well, it must have been before he didn't win the chairmanship of that committee. Yeah.
Exactly right.
I'm afraid my writing's let me down again this morning. I was too preoccupied with you and Chris Grayling. And I think it starts with a W or is it a V? What else did you want to talk about?
No idea, but we can talk about the shape of the recovery, W or V.
That's one
of the big questions that, of course, investors have been asking themselves what we're likely to see. So far, the data has been pointing to, you could argue, a V-shaped recovery, but I think it's probably too early to suggest that's the case. I think lots of people have become very excited about the shape of the recovery. Is it going to be V? Is it going to be L? Is it going to be a U-shape? The Nike swoosh, of course, I think is particularly popular. For us, I think it's probably too early to say. Listen, the data rebound has been strong. There's a long way to go. We don't know the path of the pandemic. And if you listen to epidemiologists, they can't predict the path of the pandemic. So asking economists to predict the path for the economy, given they're inextricably linked together, I think it's probably a little bit harsh to do so.
Well, an opinion piece in the Sydney Morning Herald today said there can be no proper recovery until we've seen the back of the virus.
You're so well read. You're so well read, aren't you? It's lovely to see you just gently bring in notions of, you know, opinion pieces from around the world. It's very impressive. Listen, that's exactly right. The reality is the path of the pandemic will determine, I think, the longevity of the economic downturn. and of course the intensity of it. Until we have a proper understanding of that, we can't make any true predictions.
There was some quite encouraging news about an interferon treatment this morning though.
Yeah, we get a range of different companies coming forward and saying they're making progress. I think the positive thing to focus on is the world scientists, the world medical experts have been united in their approach to try and bring this to a swift conclusion, and everyone will continue to watch that very carefully indeed. I mean, if you talk about the first half of next year, you'd have to recognise that would be a record-breaking time frame for a process that normally takes about a decade for an effective and safe vaccine. The fastest ever vaccine development was mumps. Remember, that took 4 years, although it was licensed back in 1967. You could argue that technology has moved on quite substantially, of course, in the last few decades.
Okay, foreign exchanges, the pound under pressure below 1.10 euro again this morning.
It has as euro continues to get stronger. Pound against the dollar, not too bad. They won 25. Euro dollar coming in at 114.5 in a sec. Certainly euro strength across the board. Getting you a pound buying 1.95 euro this morning.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, speak to you tomorrow. Hank Paulson, Barclays.